Saturday Night Live is celebrating its 50th anniversary this weekend with a three-hour special Sunday evening. Among the who's who of attendees at Studio 8H will be Delco native and SNL alum Sherry O'Terry. Studio 2 executive producer Kevin McCrory caught up with O'Terry this week about what she's learned in her journey from Upper Darby to Hollywood.
Sherry O'Terry, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here on WHYY. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
You were on SNL from 1995 to the year 2000. Among many bits, people will remember your cheerleader sketches with Will Ferrell.
Who's that Spartan clinging on to me?
It's me! It's me!
I said, who's that Spartan clinging on to me?
It's me! It's me!
Characters like Rita Del Vecchio, the porch lady.
No more kids getting beers for adults! Okay? Any kid who can't walk a straight line by dinner gets my foot for dessert!
Cass Van Rye on Morning Latte.
Talk to his hand.
Talk to my hand.
Talk to his hand.
Colette Reardon, the prescription drug lady.
I got the gang at the poison control center on speed dial. Good kids, good kids!
And Nadine, the clerk with the classic catchphrase.
Simo. Plus down, plus now, equals simmer down now. Now simmer down now!
And of course, your Barbara Walters impression.
Who the hell is this?
It's Barbara Walters, respected journalist, daytime sensation, and host of the highly rated nighttime news magazine, 2020.
Your time at SNL was really the exact sweet spot for me. I was age 12 to 17 when you were on the show, and your whole cast really was like such an inspiration to me and my friends growing up in Northeast Philly. So it's really an honor for me to be able to talk to you right now. And little did I know at that time that you had grown up on the other side of town in Upper Darby, and you were in your young teenage years in the early days of SNL. So I was curious, like, was the show on your radar?
Like, oh, my gosh.
What impact did it have on you?
When I watched the show, my favorites were Bill Murray and Gilda Radner. And I thought, whatever they're doing, because I always saw comedy as like, people always said, oh, you should do stand-up, you should do stand-up. And I could never imagine doing stand-up. That is so scary for me. But actually, yes, I grew up watching SNL and I was very influenced by it. And it wasn't until I moved to Los Angeles and got into the Groundling Theater that I saw, oh my God, what they do at SNL is what they do here. Sketch.
Yeah.
But it was also improv. So I started taking classes there. And I moved originally out to LA to get in the music business. And I worked at A&M Records. But the whole time I was there, I was taking classes at the Groundlings and never imagining where it would have led. Like, I just thought how lucky I would be to become a Groundling. And I thought the chances are slim. I took classes for like 2 years. And then I was in their Sunday company for 2 years. And then I got to be a Groundling. And for a year and a half, and then I got SNL. So it was like, is this a dream?
Could you take us back to those early days in Delco? Like, I've listened to some of your other interviews. It sounds like, you know, you had a single mom raising three kids. Like, it wasn't like the easiest upbringing. I'm just curious, like, what was life like then?
I guess I was, you know, class clown or whatever. Never imagining that. I think what it was when I was a kid, I was very influenced by whatever made my mother laugh. Because if she was happy, I was happy. And she listened to like George Carlin albums. She listened to comedy albums and Cheech and Chong and Bill Cosby and Woody Allen. So diverse too. And I didn't realize that I just memorized those albums.
But you went to Archbishop Prendergast for high school, is that right?
Yes, and I always would imitate what I saw on TV. And so I remember Dinah Shore show was on, and I would watch Dinah Shore, and then we would go up and hang at the corner, on the corner, with the people on my street, and I would imitate the song that she would throw so much vibrato in. Like, she would always sing like a rock song or a hip song, with all this, like, I'm as free as a bird now, and this bird you cannot change. And I just mostly, I would say, was you know, I lived in my head.
Yeah.
My imagination. So I entertained myself a lot.
What did the nuns and the priests at Prendergast think of you?
I don't think they would have thought I would have amounted to much. I wasn't really good in school, behavior-wise or academic-wise. But I realized later on that I had trouble comprehending what I read.
Yeah.
You know, and back in those days, you were just thrown in a lower track, as right. it were. And they didn't really try and help you with what your struggle was. But, you know, the people were dyslexic or you couldn't comprehend. And, you know, they've learned so much more how to teach kids that are, you know, learning on a different level than they did back when I was yeah. in class. But so I messed around a lot. And I used to look out the window all the time and just daydream.
So how old were you when you moved to L.A.?
25.
So I'm imagining it took a lot of nerve to really like, all right, I'm getting out of the Philly bubble. I'm going west. I'm doing it.
It was. And I was going out with a friend. And then kind of like a week before, the friend dropped out. And I was so upset about that. But I was still going. And luckily, my brother lived out there.
Okay.
And so I stayed with him for about a month or so. And then, or 2 months, maybe 2 months. And then I got like a single apartment in right in Hollywood. And then I was waitressing when I first got out there at a place called Carlos and Charlie's on Sunset Boulevard. And then I got a job at A&M Music Publishing. And from there, I moved over to the record company. And the whole time I was taking classes at the Groundlings. And what the coolest thing was, when I got SNL, the bands that I helped promote were on my first year. Blues Traveler, Sheryl Crow, let me see, Soundgarden. And they were like, you're the girl from The Office. How'd you get here?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So it really kind of inspired a lot of people who were working, you know, doing something they didn't necessarily want to be able to do something else, you right. know?
I guess I can just imagine like those years, like from 20 to 25, people asking you, what are you doing with your life, Sherry? What are you doing? What are you doing? And you kind of working up the nerve to like make this trip west and like maybe struggling a little bit in those early 20s. Like what were you like in those days in Philly?
I was working like as a secretary and I was the worst secretary in the world. And, but I was just kind of conforming to what I thought I could do. That I could move up in with my, you know, 12 years of just Catholic school education. And I just thought one day, I remember, I would take the L and the bus downtown. And one day I just was on the corner and I just broke down crying. Mm. And I just thought to myself, there's got to be. I was working for steamship agents. Import, export, because my mother did that and so did my sister. And I was just like, man, there's got to be more to life than this. But I didn't know what. And then I got laid off and I started working at a local tavern in my neighborhood and waitressing. And it was so much fun. I made way more money. And like, it was awesome. It was so much fun. I was able to buy a car, and but I also knew I wasn't going anywhere, you know, and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And so, you know, you're just hanging out on the weekends with your friends. And it was great. My boyfriend who I was in love with broke up with me. And that's what helped me to be like, all right. I always wanted to live in California, always, always. And so that helped me. So he, you know, did me, it broke my heart, but it did me a favor. And I saved up the little money and luckily I had my brother there, but you know, I hit the ground running.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I feel like sometimes we don't know what we're meant to do.
Yeah.
But you just do what you think you might want. And I loved the music. I wanted to sing, but I wasn't a good singer. So I got in the music business and I started out answering phones, you know?
Yeah.
So, and the great thing was I moved up that way. So by answer, you know, then I moved up and moved over to promotion, record promotion. And then I was, and it was so much fun. And I thought I was the luckiest girl in the world. I had a business card, you know, and I was sending everybody home free CDs.
Yeah,
I thought I had made it. And I thought, this is pretty good. Like, I have the Groundlings on the weekend there where I perform. And I have this good job. I have benefits. I remember, like, I have a 92 Toyota Paseo. I am killing it.
Yeah.
And I was.
Yeah.
I was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't think it could get really any better. But every time when things weren't fun at A&M anymore, they were changing people, new people came in and old people left. And I'm like, wow, this isn't fun anymore. And sometimes we don't make those, we won't quit a job because of this is better than I ever had it, but I'm miserable. Right. So sometimes, though, when you get so miserable, you that is telling you something. It's saying,
wow.
I know it's scary, but it's time to move on. And I did. And I started temping while I was doing the Groundlings. And the funny thing was I was temping in Disney Legal a lot. And when I got SNL, like a year into it, I had a meeting with a lawyer at Disney Legal. And I was with my manager and all the assistants came over to me because they remembered me from a year ago, temping. And the lawyer said, my manager, how does she know all of these? And he goes, she was here last year. It's really funny how, what can happen, but you also have to take those chances that are so scary to take. Yeah. You know?
Well, I appreciate you opening up and giving us a little bit of your journey. I kind of knew there was something I really connected with you in your story. And I kind of grew up feeling like I got to get out of here. And I left Pennsylvania and went to California myself when I was 21 without a plan, minivan full of stuff. And, you know, I ended up back on the East Coast. But like that is such a formative part of my life, like just kind of throwing caution to the wind and going to the other coast with no plan. So I really.
Yeah, but when something doesn't feel right inside and you keep trying to conform because it's like, well, they're happy. My friend is happy. My sister's happy. And this is, you know, and I wanted to settle down, get married and live near my sister and have our kids play. Like, but none of it worked out that way. And that's what I thought would make me happy too. But it was like life had other plans. But yeah, you have to take those chances that are so scary to, you know, to take. But it just broadens your scope of, you just see the bigger, like the world and getting to know different types of people. And I love going back though, too. You know, I go to the shore pretty much every summer.
Yeah. And you kind of went viral recently for a TikTok video you made.
While you're keeping up with the Kardashians, I'm keeping up with the Fudgy Wudgy man at the Jersey Shore. Fudgy Wudgy! Fudgy Wudgy!
What's up?
What's up?
I'm curious, like, is that something you kind of just do for fun now? Or do you find that like, hey, this is a necessary part of just like keeping my name out there and growing my brand?
Well, here's the thing. I don't think about it. TikTok. I don't think about getting on it. So you can see there's a long, long time where I'm not on it. And then something just kind of inspires me last minute. And I'm like, let's take a video of this. This is funny. Whatever. And I'm always shocked at how people respond because sometimes I'll think something's funny and it doesn't get much of a response. And sometimes I think, well, you know, this isn't funny. It's like 1 million, like, you know, yelling for the Fudgy Wudgy man
right,
on
right.
the beach,
right,
you know,
right.
It's really funny what people respond to. So yeah, I'm not a slave to it at all. I do more Instagram. I haven't done a TikTok in quite a while, but yeah, I'm not a slave to it at all.
Yeah.
It is good to do, get yourself out there, but I should do it more often, I guess.
So if we can go to the moment like where you make it to SNL? You know, you come from kind of these humble middle class roots in Philly. Like, was that a culture shock to the other people you were meeting? Was that intimidating at the time? Or
no, because we all came in at this, like, NBC had pretty much cleaned house before my time. And so all of us, my cast, we pretty much were all coming in at the same time. And so there was no hierarchy or cliques. We were all just excited and supportive of each other. And we just hit the ground running. So yeah, it was, I was very lucky with the timing.
And SNL is like kind of famously competitive and stressful. And you hear people talk about all their insecurities and all that. Like, were you able to really enjoy the success that you had there while you were having it?
Great question, because no, I wasn't. Because we have writers there, but they don't have to write for anybody. They just write what they want and then cast. And so I was always kind of like the last person cast of the girls. And so all my stuff, pretty much, that you saw, I co-wrote.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't written for much. So I always say it's a show that you have to audition for every week that you already got, because you're fighting to get your sketch in. And people don't realize that a lot of the actors are writing their own stuff. And so it makes it a lot harder,
right,
than a job where you know you're going to be written for. Like, I did an episode of Just Shoot Me, and it was the most pleasurable experience. I'm like, wait a second. We don't have to come in till 10 a.m. and we leave at 3. And no matter what, I'm going to be written for. And the lines are funny. Like, this is amazing. And SNL, boy, that was boot camp.
But yeah. I will say, at least for me, I remember way more about what you did at SNL than whatever was on Just Shoot Me at the time, right? There's just something about that live chemistry that, like, is amazing. And, like, from our point of view, it's like, we're watching what you guys do every week, and we're right in that prime, like, teenage year age, and we're copying everything, and we're repeating the phrases, and it's like, it just felt like you were the biggest thing in the world back then. But that wasn't the perception you had.
No, because you're kind of in a bubble. You know, I would walk to work all the time. I lived on 76, and I would walk to 30 Rock, because it was the only time I would be outside. And on writing nights, I didn't get home till the sun came up. I would, you know, it was rough. You know, the sun's up, and, you know, you're writing all night, and you have 2 nights to write, you know, to get your stuff in by Wednesday morning. And so you're inside a lot. Yeah. And then you sleep when you can, and then you're right back. And, you know, it's like a late, people don't get into SNL till 3 in the afternoon. And it's like from 3 to like 3.
Right.
And I wasn't a night owl. It was kind of hard. And you try not to snack. Because they bring in snacks to keep you up. And it's like, this is not good for me.
And then post SNL, I mean, you've done so many things, been in so many TV shows, movies, Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I went in there, oh. And and that song, that theme is played all the whole.
It was fun. It was fun.
Grown Ups 2, you're in a Dog Man movie, I understand, coming out this year. I get the sense, though, that, like, you really have had to hustle and grind for, like, every opportunity that you've had in your career.
It's been rough. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's really, really, it's hard, you know, and you hope to get an audition. But I did, let me see, it's coming up pretty soon. I did an episode of The New Sex and the City.
Oh, cool.
And just like that. That was a lot of fun. I play a matchmaker. That was a blast. I did an episode of Mid-Century Modern with Nathan Lane and Matt Bomer. That's on Hulu. That's coming up. That was really fun. That's an amazing show. And then I'm also developing. But I do love doing voiceover, too.
I guess I'm curious, like, knowing all that you know about the business and everything you've been through, like, what advice do you give, you know, Susie from Haddonfield in the Philly suburbs or whatever? Like, she wants to get into the show business. Like, what do you tell her?
If I could give anybody advice coming in Don't take anything personal, even if it is. And that is a way of not being subject to the external all the time. You really have to work on your inner self and get your foundation firm, whether it comes from, you know, your family or your friends, outside support system, or meditating or prayer. It's kind of like a lot of it is about inner strength.
Shari O'Tiri, this was an absolute pleasure for me. Thank you for making the time.
Oh, my pleasure as well. Thank you.
That was Studio 2 executive producer Kevin McCrory with Delco native and SNL alum Shari O'Tiri. This edition of Studio 2 Extra was produced by Kevin along with Debbie Bilbo.